Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is going on, everyone? It's time for another edition of DDP Snake Pit right here, presented exclusively by Podcast Heat and AdFreeShows.com. I, of course, am John Alba, and this week we've got a special presentation of DDP Snake Pit. Of course, we've got the Hall of Famer, Mr. Diamond Dallas Page, but besides him, you see him, one of the stars of AEW today, one of the true pillars of the company, Mr. Darby Allin. Darby, how you doing today, man?
Howdy. I'm doing lovely.
We're so happy to see you. Now, Dallas, I noticed that we're missing someone. Jake the Snake, yeah. I look forward to his wit every day, but where's he at today?
You know, first of all, in the old days, like before Jake got sober, he just would no-show. You know, already called me and told me some story. But the Jake today, who's been sober for, I would say, like super sober, like no screw ups for the last 6.5-7 years. You know, when he first got sober, it was on and off again occasionally. But he's been so sober, so clean. He literally met me outside as I was walking in, and he had zero voice. I go, "Why did you even come?" He goes, "Well, I was trying to work it, and I didn't want to disappoint you." I'm like, "No, dude, go home." I mean, he had no voice. So I was super psyched that we had Darby on the show. That's awesome. So one of the things, Darby, you know, I got a bunch of questions, and we've known each other for since you got an AEW, but it was Cody. Was it Cody the one who found you? Like, let's go right back to where you started from. Where I know you were doing the independents and stuff, but was it Cody who discovered you for AEW?
Yeah, it was. So I was doing this show up in Northeast Wrestling against Pentagon, who's also in AEW.
Right.
Crazy Wild Man. And I was having a match with him, and then Cody saw that match. And then at the time, Cody just thought I was like the crash test dummy.
Right.
But he actually saw me like work a match where there was more than just taking gnarly bumps. And then he asked Lombardi what my contract status was, and at the time I was signed with another like little promotion, and then the moment I heard that like Cody was interested, long story short, I paid $12,000 to get out of my contract. I took a loan out, and then I remember I used to hit Cody up like every day, just blow his phone up, and he would never really answer. And
he said, "No way, the worst." Now his old man. His old man, I gotta tell you, starting to interject, we'll come back to this. His old man, I would call him, "Dream, call me back, blah, blah, blah." I mean, it might go 2 weeks, and then eventually I'd see a message on my chain. "God damn, that is, I've been calling, and leaving you messages, you ain't been calling me back. You're pissing me off." Click. You know, he would do shit like that.
Yeah, one time.
Just to fuck with me, you know? But Cody just don't answer that damn phone. Unless you're at a level he needs to get a hold of somebody, then he's picking that phone right up magically. So when I don't, he's texting, he sucks too. Like, I'll just text him, "Yo," and that's it. And then I'll look back, "Hey," and then we'll get a couple texts. Then I'll ask him a question. I won't hear for days. I mean, people get they get upset with it, but I'm so used to it because I've known him since he was 12 years old, and he wasn't always like that. But funny, just funny the way. So he never got back, but you kept blowing his phone up, right?
Yeah, well, because the
thing normally that pisses him off.
But I didn't give a shit.
No, good move.
I didn't care who I pissed off, because like
Did you already pay your $12,000 out now?
No, that's why I was hitting him up. I was like, is this for sure? Because I'm taking $12,000 out of a loan. And then I was like, I need to know, like, what's going on.
Now, wait. Is AEW up and going at the time?
No.
There is no AEW, right?
This is before Double or Nothing even happened.
Wow.
So, like, I just heard that there was this new company starting up. And then this is before TV was, like, even talked about. And I was like, this is crazy. All I heard when they were promoting it was, like, the word creative freedom. And I was like, that's where I need to be. So I just hit Cody up, like, a bunch. Then eventually I went to his house and then we talked.
Well, obviously he gave you his address.
Yeah.
Because give that out.
A lot of people are afraid to give me their address. They think I'm going to do some shit at their house.
You are like the tattoo on the back of your neck. And I wish I was wearing a damn shirt. And we did a documentary, Relentless.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be like, if you really want something, and it's your dream, you have to be pleasantly persistent, which is what you are.
Well, that's the thing, because at the time, I was kind of being groomed to go to NXT, and
really,
I saw the writing on the wall. And this is back when 205 Live was a thing. If you remember 205 Live,
I remember.
And I was like, hell fucking no, I'm not going there to do that. Like, I don't want to be put in a box. Like, my money is wrestling, like, David Goliath matches.
100%.
And I'm not, like, I wrestled in, like, Mexico a few times, and then I felt like everything that made me special was lost when I was in Mexico, because the art of selling, like, goes out the window.
No, there is zero selling in Mexico.
I remember, I was like, yeah, this isn't, like, and then all I could think about is, I was like, there's no way. So I was like, I wanted AEW, and then I can sink or swim on my own, like, merit. Like, you know, I have the opportunity to get over as myself, you know, and then fail as myself. So that's why I was just constantly, like, calling. And then we had the meeting, and then...
Wait, back up. I also have to say something. There is zero selling in Mexico, but you know who sold like a son of a bitch and got over like the Ultimate Warrior was Conan. When Conan had the braids, I mean, and the whole deal he had going on, he was so over because he was one of the few guys who actually sold down there. And Vampiro, too. So,
yeah, I was put in these crazy, like, multi-man matches.
Like, there's 20 people.
There's, like, eight dudes. And then, like, I was like, I can sell on the floor the whole match, but no one's going to care. But, you know, so, yeah. So, like, it was a feeling I had that I needed to go there. Like, there was – I don't know. I was just so drawn to it. So we had the meeting, me and Cody, and then.
So when did he finally answer his phone, call you back? Like, how far are we out of Double or Nothing at that time?
Shit, I would say probably 2 months. Yeah. So I wasn't on the first AEW pay-per-view, like Double or Nothing. I went to the building to watch it, but I wasn't like participating in it, which I felt was like, looking back on it, like the best thing to happen, because I probably would have been pushed into this like battle royal and kind of like lost in the shuffle. So I feel like everything happens for a reason. And then the fact that I wasn't on that show and I was saved till their next show, where I actually wrestled Cody in that 20-minute Broadway.
Which, by the way, that's a big fucking deal.
Yeah, yeah.
In your career, that's a big deal.
That was the night that when I meet a lot of people, they say, that's when I first heard about you.
Right.
And, you know, like,
because Cody made you.
Well, that match, that match, like, I knew everything was riding on that match. Like, I needed to, like, go all out for that match and, like, get as wild as possible. That's why you see me, like, doing these crazy coffin drops on the apron. I knew that, like, this is the first impression for, like, a lot of people. So, you know, I remember he texted me and he's like, 20-minute Broadway? ? Like, 2 months.
What did you think? What did you think when you saw that?
I honestly, like, I didn't know what a Broadway was. And I was like, what the fuck is he talking about? I remember I was in Los Angeles at the time. And then
he's taking me to Broadway?
I was like, sure, you want to see Phantom of the Opera? Like,
let's do it.
but the thing is, like, but then what really, like, kind of I felt like sold me not sold me, but I got Tony Khan. So John Moxley, when he did when he left the WWE, like he did a few matches in New Japan,
right?
But his first U.S. indie date back was against me.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is before he wrestled in AEW or anything. It was against me. And then at this rate, I was already like kind of doing this. I already signed to AEW, but I don't feel like Tony Khan was that familiar with my work.
Yeah, I didn't know your shit, right?
Yeah. And then he saw that match and he's like,
now, how did he see that match? Was it on like a internet thing?
Yeah.
That's where you did the handcuff gimmick?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
And then I remember like Tony saw that and was like, okay, I get it now.
Right.
Cause like Cody was like selling him on me up until then. But then it's like, he sees that. He's like, oh, I get it. And then it's like the 20-minute Broadway with Cody. Like it was a no brainer to book at that rate because I was like, you know, I was like, I wasn't under the impression that we were going to go a draw. I thought it was just going to be a loss, you know?
Sure.
But that was like real cool of Cody to do that because.
But let's stop there. Let's just stop there. I want you to really take that in because that's a moment in your career that literally made you.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, this cat who, you know, broke away, you know, from, you know, WWE making stupid fucking money. Like he's got, I don't know what he was making, but I know that spot somewhere around $500,000 a year. And you walk away from that because you believe you are a main event guy.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the same inner belief that you have. Like when you look at you and you walk it through, just regular dude, fucking like he's a main event guy. Yeah. Cause you know where it starts? Right here.
Yeah.
That 6-inch piece of real estate in between your ears. And nobody else has to see it but you. So Cody saw that. He went out, made his name independently, made everybody forget about Stardust. And that was the key to get to that point. And then Tony Khan and him bonding, and then the beginning of AEW. And the first thing he does, and I'm watching him, and I'm watching that match, and I don't know the finish because I always told him I don't want to know the finish. I want to be surprised. When I saw it at Broadway, I was like, wow, this kid's special because he would never have done that if he didn't think so.
Well, that's you know, I don't take any of that shit for granted.
Like, can't.
I know, like, you know, people can say whatever about Cody, like, you know, now that he's gone, but you know, I still like, I have nothing negative to say. People's lives and people's decisions and their paths are all different. And like, I'm like, I love that dude. And,
you got it, man.
Then, like, but
he's really like your macho. Like when Macho put me over.
Yeah.
I mean, that changed my fucking life.
If you look at it too, is after that, I had three other matches with Cody.
Right. And he put you over.
And the last, he beat me, the second time.
Right. What you needed to.
He beat me the third time.
Right.
And then, but the fourth time, which are our final match that we've had, I beat him for the TNT championship.
Which is the one that really meant something.
Yeah. And like, I personally don't give a shit about wins and losses. Like I don't, I really
don't. I
got
it.
Like, that's the thing I hear from Sting, you know, because what a lot of people don't know is, you know, people think like, oh, why, like, you know, how does Darby and Sting get along? And I'm like, what they don't see is like our camaraderie behind the scenes.
Yeah. Let's say that.
But to touch base on real quick is like what Sting taught me more than anything is if you're as good as you think you are, you can win in losing.
100%.
And like, you know, like the egos and stuff like that. And I love, it's kind of, you know, I love like putting other people over.
Right.
If I know that it's, if it's going to, if that person's going to, if the person's somewhat new to the company and they're going to take that ball and like run with it, and like, then it helps the whole place out.
100%. Yeah, so go back to like how many, my two of my four favorite matches are losses. One is the Sting on Nitro, where I lost the title to him and then won it back later that night. And the other one's the Goldberg. I love that match.
Yeah.
And the people were so good. I love to have won. Hell yeah. But it was an amazing match. And we had the people in the palm of our hands. So look how many times Scott Hall lost, how many times Jake Roberts lost, how many times I lost. It doesn't, it's all how you do it.
Yeah.
And a hero is defined by the size of his opponent. So every time you walk out there with one of those guys who are bringing twice your size, the people are going to be with you like a son of a bitch.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, it, it's just, it's fun for me. You know, I love telling that story, and, you know, I don't care if I don't know. I have no ego when it comes to this stuff, but.
So let me ask you, like, who, like, I saw a video in you, which I thought, well, let me talk about this first. Don't put the Cody stuff away, but you would get, when AEW started, a lot of videos, like vignettes, like Vince would do or WCW would do back in the day. But most people don't know you did them.
Yeah, I do all my videos.
and Cody told me at one point, he's like, man, he goes, a lot of people are getting pissed off at me because I'm playing all this Darby stuff. He said, but Darby does them himself.
Yeah.
And they're really good.
Yeah. Like,
so what made you think to do that? Because I guess in this age of YouTube and everything, it's a step farther than when I was coming up, but pretty, you know, ballsy to, but you've been doing this your whole life, right?
Yeah. I went to film school and I've been filming and like making movies since I was like in sixth grade and doing all this like shit. And then a lot of the crazy skateboarding. And I, so like with the videos, it was just another reason when they say create freedom, sure, for AEW, that like, I'm like, all right, like put this up. And then I feel like the fans can kind of, the reason I like doing crazy stuff outside of the ring and then showing my old past skate video, like slams and all this crazy stuff, right, is because I can go on TV and say I can take an ass kicking, but like, these videos show that I can really take it out.
You really can.
And they're like, oh, this guy's like legit. Like, there's no way to fake him falling 20 feet on the concrete, you know? So that's why, like, I like love these videos. And it's post, like, it's also an extension of like my creativity. And it's like fun for fans to see that, because it just, instead of them just watching me wrestle, they can kind of get another feel for how, like, what I am into outside of wrestling. Like, I remember the first promo that we did that aired on TV is when we went to a Ghost Mane concert, which is like my buddy's band, they're playing. And then
right,
they put me in a body bag and threw me in the crowd, and I was crowd surfing this body bag. And then like, I remember that was on TV. And I remember that was on TV and people were like, that was the coolest thing ever. And I was like, yeah, like, and then ever since then, we've obviously like went more and more insane with these promos. Like last year for All Out, when I was wrestling CM Punk, we did a video where,
man, if I said, what this you go from one of the most over guys in professional wrestling. You go to that level. I mean, it's very quickly you rise, but it's all the work you put in,
yeah,
to get there. But go ahead, keep talking.
We did a thing where we tied my brother in a body bag under a helicopter with a rope, like, so he's attached to the helicopter, and then we were like flying it around, so he's like dangling, like. So we're above this lake, and the body bag's like kind of spinning in a circle like that. And I'm supposed
Wait a second. He's in the body bag.
Yeah, attached to a rope.
Tied to a rope. What, his ankles?
No, no. Like, he's got like a vest on inside the body bag.
Okay. Now, can you see him?
No.
So he's, why do you have everybody in there?
Because I wanted to have, because you see his arm hanging out.
What are you doing?
No, I
sacrifice the brother.
Yeah, but the thing is, so at the end of the video, I jump out of the helicopter. But I like have to time it perfect because he's spinning around in circles like this. So if you watch the video in slow motion,
I got
to
see that video.
I jump and I barely miss him. Like a second later, he swings by. So there's like like a split second where if he spun around at the time, I would have kicked his head on the way down and probably broke my leg. And
how far did you drop?
Probably 70 feet.
In the water?
Yeah. Okay.
he's crazy, but he's not that crazy, Dallas.
It was a cinematic promo, just like the body bag. But then we also we stepped it up even more when you were at the house.
Oh God! Yeah. Wait, my back is up. So Darby calls me up. He goes, "Hey D, you know, I'm gonna jump. I got this Jeep, and I'm gonna jump my house and crash into a bunch of shit." I said, "You're gonna what?" He's like, "Darby, take it easy. Don't beat your body up anymore." He goes, no, it's going to be safe. It's going to be good. We got everything worked out. So I get all the way down there. And I don't know, something went wrong that day where they couldn't do it or whatever.
The insurance. They weren't.
They didn't have enough insurance.
No, they wouldn't allow the insurance. We had to go to some backwoods insurance company that would allow me to do that. Because this guy was like, he's going to jump his house in a Jeep. Like, no, we're not. No one's going to sign off for this. But then we found some, I don't even know the name of the insurance, like Sunshine Lanes, or it sounds like a white trash bowl. And it was like something that like gave us the green light. And then that's the week later.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
So wait a minute. I drive up on the house, and I'm with Eric Watts, and he's got this mound of dirt that is lined up like it's a friggin' ramp.
Yeah.
You create this ramp of dirt. It's got to be, I don't know, 100,000 pounds of dirt that's up there that rides right up to his house, and he's got this Jeep that the brakes don't work.
and there was no speedometer either.
And there's no speedometer. So he has to get to a certain speed to be able to, and they don't know this because they haven't tried it. So it doesn't happen that day. And then it goes like a week or so later, you call me up again and say, "Listen, I promise this time it's coming." So I come down there, Sting's there, we hang out for a bit. But here comes Darby, and he goes, "The speedometer doesn't work now." I go, "But don't you have to get to a certain speed?" He's like, "Yeah." I go, "Well," he goes, "I'm just going to gun it."
Yeah.
And that son of a bitch flew. He's here, so obviously he's okay. But
I remember it because leading up to it, Travis Pastrana helped set that up.
And right.
He's like the madman. And then he like texted me the night before. He's like, "Yo, just to remind you, there's a good chance that you will break your back on this." And it's like riding that like Sting, you might have to find a new partner here. I'm going to do this, like, no matter what.
But, you know, one of the things that, and this is, you know, plugging my own shit, but one of the things that people don't know is you are heavy about preventative maintenance.
Yeah.
And I really don't know, really, there's a couple of guys in the business, but nobody like Darby. First of all, you're straight edge, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll get to this in a second. Let's talk about being straight edge, because I think Punk is too, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of guys from what I understand. Yeah,
Brody King also.
Yeah, you know, and to, you know, you go back to my day, nobody's straight edge. You know, there's some drinking and pills and booze and coke and all that. I was already through all that shit by the time I became a wrestler, and I never realized that the pills, like you take a Vicodin, you need it for the painkiller. It makes helps go away. If you take a couple beers, all of a sudden, like, ooh, whoa, what the fuck? Like, it changes. And then you take a couple more Vikes, and you get higher. And then maybe people too in somas, which are muscle relaxers. And this is why so many guys died.
Yeah.
Because your heart is a muscle. And when you're taking all those muscle relaxers, and I knew guys who would take 5 somas at a time.
Really?
Boom. And then take 5 more half hour later, and then maybe take 5 more, and then forget they took those 5 and take 5 more. I mean, there's been everything from guys going into comas for 3 months to their heart just stopping and dying. And yeah. And that's why I don't know what the drug policy is at AEW. I never was around that, but WWE, I mean, they came out with a serious, like, you got a pill in you? Who gave it to you? How, you know, how much is in you? I mean, it's a big deal. But you came in, and that's one of the, I think, one of the biggest reasons why you can do, you know, a lot of the, take the abuse. Because, I mean, when I look back at your earlier career, we're going to throw up some of these, skateboarding off the roof of your house. And I mean along the top, and then you go down. What gave you that message to do that? Well, I think I'll just ride my skateboard around the house. And
So, growing up, when I first moved to Seattle, I spent a lot of time alone just because, like, I didn't have too much friends. And then, like, I felt like I, for example, in seventh grade, how I spent my spring break was, like, I, like, stayed in a walk-in closet for 5 days and tried to test myself to, like, you know, like...
How long you could stay in a closet by yourself with no food or water?
Well, I my brother, like, delivered the food.
Yeah, your brother is one of your cronies.
Yeah, and then, yeah. So I'd be like, yo, can you make me a sandwich? But, like, it's just because I spent so much time alone.
Sir. How old are you then?
13, 14. Okay. I spent so much time alone, like, staring at the wall, like, and just being so bored, wishing, like, I had, like, a purpose. Because, like, I didn't really know, like, because I loved professional wrestling growing up.
Right.
But, like, I just thought it wasn't in the cards just because I was so small.
Right.
And then
we're going to come back to that because, yeah, I want to know what shifted that. But keep going where you're going.
And then I would spend so much time alone just being, like, bored and, like, not having really any friends. And then, like, but the moment I kind of started doing physical stunts, like crazy stuff.
What's the first stunt you did?
Front flip off the washer onto, like, the concrete floor.
You flipped down. Are you landing on your feet?
No, not on my back.
Oh, my God. On a concrete floor. Okay,
yeah.
What obsessed you to do it? Then you say, fuck, that hurts. I'm not doing that again.
No,
not
I,
you.
I know. Yeah, I felt like just feeling like they're, you know, that's like the big thing with, like, stunts for me is it kind of gives me a purpose, like, and it pushes me out of my comfort zone because I could be so comfortable and complacent. But the moment you do something gnarly, you're like, oh crap, I was capable of doing that.
Wow.
So it makes you stronger mentally. And then that's, like, what I started doing. And then the moment I started, like, doing more skateboarding and
so are you a skateboarder already at that point?
I'm just learning.
Just learn.
Yeah. And then the moment I just skipped the basics, like, with the skateboarding, I just went straight for, like, the crazy stuff.
So you didn't even learn how to flip the board or anything?
I didn't know how to do a kickflip probably until, like, 3.5 years into skateboarding. Kickflip is, like, the basic, you know?
Right.
So, like, I
skateboarded. My wheels were the friggin' metal wheels.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, those were, like, that was the worst skateboard ever.
Yeah.
I crashed and burned so many times because I was also a skateboarder and a surfer. You know, but now I don't want to fall off that fucking board. I want to get on those big boards so bad. I want to do it so bad.
Yeah.
But I know it's like in my brain, it's like,
Sting,
you can't do that.
Me and Sting joke about it where I'll skate down to the entrance and he'll ride a long board down. Yeah, like
has he done it?
No, but he had a longboard in his garage when I went to his house down in Texas.
Oh, he might be practicing.
And I was like, I want to see it. It's like there's Surfer Sting, Crow Sting, and now Skateboarder Sting.
Oh, God.
It's the final incarnation.
Well, I want to get all of this Sting later, but let's keep going because I really want to know, like, how this all came to be.
Well, so, like, the more crazier stuff I did, the more I felt like it like opened me up to the world and like kind of introduced me to more and more people. So through my crazy stunts, I started filming stunts for that show, Ridiculousness.
Right, Ridiculousness.
And then selling clips to them. And then I was like,
back up. Because most people just give those clips away, hoping they get on TV. You actually were smart enough to like sell them to them?
Yeah. So like
what'd your first one sell for?
300.
No shit.
And then so when I'm just, I don't have a job. And I'm riding the metro.
How old are you?
18. Like, I'm riding the metro bus.
Right.
And, like, you know, being, like, so broke in Washington. Like, and then, so I'm selling this. So, like, $300. Like, holy shit. Like,
yeah, fucking hey.
And then, so I'd sell those clips. But then it started, like, I felt like it I was like, oh, shit. Like, and then I kept doing more and more and more crazy stuff. And then there's this big lightning bolt sculpture in front of the Space Needle. It's, like, insane.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
And I dropped in on it with a skateboard, and then
how did you get up there though?
Oh, you can climb up. Like there's a way. You just jump up and like kind of like pull yourself up, and then you climb to the top. So like I when I dropped in on that, I remember then I sold that clip to Tony Hawk.
No kidding.
Yeah, because I ate like the
now,
worst.
How did you get a hold of Tony Hawk? That's a big name.
He came to me for that
really?
Clip.
No shit. Yeah.
And then
so he found you by seeing.
And
that
this
clip.
Is 2011.
Right.
So like I sell him that clip.
And how much
for shit? I think it was like 400.
Tony, you fuck.
No. but it was his.
You ripped him off.
It was the Tony Hawk.
The Ride Channel. Like,
I love Tony.
Yeah, the Ride Channel like bought it, and his YouTube channel.
Right.
And then and it was like it was cool because that was another thing. I'm like, oh fuck, like I've made it again.
Yeah.
And then it's just like from there, it was just like let's do everything like crazy shit, and then like.
But the roof thing. Well, we all know Mick Foley, Cactus Jack, Dude Love, Mankind.
Yeah, jumping off. Yeah, I remember that.
Jumping off his roof into some stacked up beds. That literally changed the face of wrestling.
Yeah.
Mick going off the top of the cage. That changed everything.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget watching that. Malone and I were getting ready for our thing with Rodman and Hogan, and he was at my house, and he was getting a massage, and he all of a sudden heard this eruption, and he stuck his head out of the thing. He goes, what happened? I said, what? Oh, my God. Is he dead? And you see Mick laying there. And Mick, I mean, wow. That was the craziest thing I ever saw. And then falling through the – getting choke slammed, and yeah. I just watched that shit. If anybody, and I'm sure most of you guys were listening to this, you must be watching the documentaries they're doing on A&E, the WWE biographies, because they have mix up there. It's really good.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
What makes you ride along the house and just fall off your roof?
That I don't know. it's just being in Washington, in Seattle, like it rains all the time.
Right.
So I feel like you start coming up with these like crazy like ideas.
You do.
Yeah. But
I don't see anybody else doing that shit back then.
But like what was cool about it. And back to the Tony Hawk one was all these years later, I'm in AEW and then I start talking to Tony Hawk.
Right.
And then I go down to his skate park in San Diego with him and I'm talking to him and I'm like, you remember I'm the guy who dropped on the lightning bolt. And it's like, he's like, you're that guy. Like full circle. It was like 10 years later.
Yeah.
And it was cool.
Pretty cool moment, right?
Yeah. Like to see like, oh, like there's this, well, cause a lot of people just like, I was a skateboarder And then I kind of disappeared, and then I became Darby Allin. And a lot of people thought, like, I died. Like, they thought, like, I dropped something and I died.
Hey, kind of logical. You know? Yeah,
that makes sense.
So let's go. Let me go back to the preventive maintenance because we haven't finished that right there. Like, Darby will bring me guys all the time. He'll call me up and go, D, listen, what are some of the guys you brought over my house to do DDPY?
Oh, I brought over my buddy Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky.
He's
a mess. You're like, yeah. He's a mess. He needs to be over. Like, how often do you do my program? Like, yeah, I know you do an app, you do it by yourself. How many days a week are you actually doing that?
I do it 5 times a week. And yeah. I've been doing it like the hip opener and then all the stretching. And I like the warm ups that you guys got too.
All this is what keeps you being able to walk around like a normal person.
Well, that's the thing. Like, we talked about it before, but since we're on the podcast right now, I'll touch base on it. Like, just as crazy I'm in the ring, like, I'm just as crazy with, like, rehab, rehabilitation, like, taking care of myself, because I don't like feeling, like, tight or sore or beat up.
So, and with what you do, that's kind of hard.
Yeah, so, like, but the thing is, a lot of people, like, I feel great right now. Like, nothing hurts.
Amazing.
Like, I can, you know, and it is like, people are like, it's crazy when I see other people that do way less,
right,
are in like way more pain
because they don't do the preventative maintenance.
Yeah,
and then it's common sense.
They're like, oh, you're just born like a cat, and I'm like, no, dude.
No.
Like, I was just like, I remember when I was skateboarding and I was like having a lot of gnarly slams, and this is before like I picked up any like, you know, programs with like stretching or something like that. I was always like, oh my gosh, fuck. And then, when I got into wrestling and then more of the sports therapy, like, came into play.
Sure.
And, like, everything, I was like, man, like, this is what I need. And
but being straight edge is also a huge thing for that. Because when you're partying, you know, you're breaking down your body, you know. And if you're going to go out and do that crazy shit.
Well, that's what they say with, like, the recovery time. Like, I know a lot of skaters that, like, once they, like, break their leg, instead of, like, they're like, oh, I'm depressed, I'm gonna drink beer, and that like makes the recovery time so much harder. So it's like, I'm like, no guys, like, just, you know, so
eat real food.
It's like once you get into it in the routine, it's not that hard.
It's not.
And then, like, that's the thing is, like, when people talk about, like, eating healthy, they're like, oh, it's so, either A, it's so expensive, or B, it's so hard, so easy just to go and get some fast food. I'm like, but once you get in the routine, like, things are like super easy. And then, like, so I've gotten so much of a routine now in my life. As much as like I like to travel and do like crazy stuff, I still have like a specific like routine that I follow.
Sure. And it's just all the stuff that you learned from me and stuff you picked up along the way.
Yeah.
But it's about the commitment and the consistency.
Yeah.
Without commitment, there is no start. Without consistency, there is no finish. And you got a long career ahead of you. And for you to be like saying, man, I don't feel sore at all. How old are you now?
29.
Okay. So, you know, that's, you know, you're over 25.
Yeah.
So for you to be able to say that, that's a powerful statement.
Everyone keeps putting work in. You're going to feel it when you're like, when you get older.
No, you're going to feel it.
Yeah. But what I'm saying, that what I'm telling them is like, they just assume my life and my physicality, what I've done to myself, started when I was wrestling. I started when I was 21.
Right.
They just assume, but then, like, they forget that I've been doing crazy shit since I was, like, 8. Like, you know, so to me, I'm like, people just, because I remember my first day at wrestling practice. Like, I'm taking.
And where did you train at?
The Buddy Wayne down in Everett, Washington.
Oh, Everett Washington.
You met his son.
Yes,
Nick,
I did.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been getting Nick. He's like 17 now, but I've been getting him on your program and stuff. Like,
right.
We were doing it because sometimes he'll stay with me on these AEW like loops.
Right.
And then we'll wake up and do your program in the morning.
Nick Wayne, right?
Yeah.
I just watched one of his matches. The kid, he does a diamond cutter that I see. I don't know if he's using it as a finish or whatever, but like, shit, I've never even seen. Not even out of Randy and, you know, freaking,
but
you know, it's pretty, kid's pretty freaking talented.
And I told him, I'm like, dude, start the program now.
Yeah. But so you're the one who turned him on.
Yeah, that's why he came up to you.
Yeah, like, well, his mom came up to me first.
Yeah, his mom. You know? Yeah. But, I remember we were doing that like a couple of weeks before he met you. And I was like, you got to start it now. you know, because you're doing a lot of crazy stuff in the ring and you don't want to, you know, just assume that you're going to feel good forever.
100%. Now, let's go back. Let's talk about it for a second, because I love looking at young talent that get it. And he gets it as far as the moves,
yeah,
and the dance. And I said to him, I said, you need to sell way more, bro. You know, because that's what's really taking you. You still do crazy shit, but you sell.
Yeah.
And you can't all of a sudden get a can of fire, you know, hose up your ass, and all of a sudden you're strong as shit. Like, no, you got to be selling.
Well, since I went to film school, the way I like to look at things with wrestling is your wrestling can either be like that movie, The Expendables, where it's just like an action movie and there's not a lot, there's just like crazy shit going on. So when you leave the theater, you're like, oh, that's cool. But a week later, it doesn't move you. It's just like, oh, that was cool. Or you could have your match be like, I'm going to say a random movie here, like Good Will Hunting,
where
it affects you long after people like think about that movie on an emotional level.
Right.
And that's where I think we like selling, you know, like you can either, people are going to remember your match because you're selling, or because crazy matches with just moves are a dime a dozen nowadays, yep, more than ever.
It's like the girl who comes out in the fitness contest who does the flips, boom, 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 boom. You go, oh my God. The next girl's like, oh my God. By the next girl, wow, that was kind of cool. Oh, hey, by the next girl's like, I'm going to get some popcorn. You want some? You know, so there was a quote, and this is a quote you're burning your brain, and because you already get it. But there's a woman named Maya Angelou, years and years and years ago, said they will not, what she had learned is they will not remember who you are. They won't remember what you said, but they will always remember the way they made you feel.
Yeah.
And that's what that is. And that's selling and seeing that, you know, when you watch like Flair and Macho or Flair and Steamboat, I mean, like those guys, as strong as they were, they sold like a son of a bitch, man.
Oh, yeah. That goes back to not having an ego with like trying to like look like the big guy. Cause I know there's like smaller guys and their brain, they want to wrestle as if they're like, you know, Hogan or something. Right. Like that. I'm like, bro, like,
no.
It's like, I used to think being 165 pounds was a disadvantage, but now I find it the biggest advantage.
It is.
Because it's just like selling and having that sympathy. And then I'm like, now I can't even imagine if I was 6'5", 280 or something, you know? So I'm just like, oh, thank God that I'm, you know.
Hey, dude, everything I'm sorry. Johnny, I'm sorry. I haven't cut. There's a lot of things I want to talk to him about, so let me cut you out. But if you got something to say to Darby, throw him there.
Build off that point, actually, because, Darby, I've been watching you for 6-7 years now. I got a chance to work a lot of promotions that you've worked with, and seeing how you captivate audiences is one of the coolest. I was at the match with Cody, the first match at Fyter Fest, and I remember looking around and seeing everyone, they recognized that there was something special about what they were watching. I host Matt Hardy's podcast, and Jeff Hardy, we always talk about, he's the rock star. He's the enigma. There's something about Jeff Hardy that you see and you're like, that's a superstar. Darby Allin has a similar characteristic, utilizing that against your height disadvantage and your weight and all that. So what I want to ask you is, when and how did you recognize that that was something you could incorporate into your character to create this larger than life enigma that people would just be so attracted to?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with my outside influences that I brought into the world of wrestling, because I'm so happy that like when I was 18 years old, like right when I graduated high school, I like looked up wrestling schools in Seattle, but I didn't have the balls to actually like sign up because I was like,
how old were you then?
18.
Yeah.
But like I graduated high school as 119 pounds. And then like I remember I just had this like big ass mohawk and I'm like looking at the website.
Wait a minute. Let me picture that. Okay, I got it.
I'm looking at the website and then like everyone on the website page, they're just like bigger guys with like sweatpants, sweatshirts. They look like athletes. And then I'm like, there's no way I'm gonna fit into this. So I was like, screw it, I'm just gonna go to film school. And then I'm so happy that I didn't join wrestling right when I was 18, because the years of 18 to 21 shaped me so much, just with my skateboarding and like my outside influences of stuff I was doing. And then you know, with anybody that asks me advice, like for wrestling, I always say, bring your outside influences into wrestling, because things can happen like a million times, get recycled in wrestling. But it's cool to know that like my crazy stunts or my skateboarding or like the, like what I like to bring into, you know, the world of wrestling, I feel like it helps shape me, and it makes me like there's something different about that guy, because I feel like people can, like they can relate to me, because like I remember when I was growing up, there wasn't a lot of wrestlers I felt like I could really relate to. And then it's cool that like there's kids.
How about Raven?
No, not really. Okay. Yeah. And I just think that was because, you know, just cause his work in Portland, like I would like listen to a lot of stuff. And I loved listening to his psychology.
Yeah. We've had him on the show, and you know, one of the best guys who really understands the psychology of wrestling.
But I'm talking about like on a personal level, like who I could relate to, who I'd see myself like hanging out with. And then there's like, I was like, man, like, so I think a lot of people see, and then they're like, oh, that he reminds me of some crazy guy I knew in high school or whatever, you know, just cause like everything that I do outside of the ring, with whether it's Nitro Circus or whether it's the stuff with Tony Hawk or like, you know, my, like the fact that like I have a skateboard with Death Wish Skateboards, which is like one of the top skate companies in the world. Like people are like, oh, like he's the, it's like he,
it crosses over.
Yes.
Crosses. And that's so important.
And that's the big thing I've told Tony when I first got to AEW, is like, I want to connect with fans that either A, gave up on wrestling in the 90s,
right.
or B, never gave it a chance, because they're just like, oh, whatever. Like, I don't like pro wrestling. But I feel like when people like see me, they're like, oh, like, okay, let's, what's this guy about?
So that's a good segue here to, did you paint your face from the very first time you had a match?
No.
So when did that incorporate into your who you were?
So I always wanted to paint my face. But like I remember I was driving, my first match I had was at this like place in the middle of nowhere, Oregon.
40 people?
Less than that. Yeah, there was probably 3 people there.
And this, well, let me just interject here. Anyone's listening, you want to be a big time wrestler, that's where it starts.
Yeah.
In front of nobody.
Yep.
I wrestled on a card with Ric Flair on top, Sting, Luger, Steiner Brothers. We had 300 people there.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because wrestling hit such a low, and it was in an arena, because they'd come from and they'd booked arenas.
Yeah.
So this is like 20,000. So everything's like blocked off and curtained off, and there's like a spot for like 3,000 people. And there's 300 people out there. So like that was the big time, you know? So with TV, with everything, I think today is a much better time for a kid coming up, because there's so many independents.
Absolutely.
You know, and the people like you out there who will communicate with them. You know who you are, but you don't play the big superstar shit. You're humble, and that's the way you gotta be.
Yeah, like that was my big goal with like coming into wrestling. I want to like leave the same way I came in. And that's like have, you know, being humble and not like all of a sudden I blink and I'm like, who the fuck am I anymore? Like, I don't know who I am. Like,
But you do though.
Yeah. But that's the thing is like, just like, that's what goes with like staying humble and stuff like that. And
so go back to the face. Go back to the face. Donna.
Yeah. Well, I always wanted to paint my face, but my trainer at the time was just like, oh, like don't paint your face. Like he's like, just he might have thought it might have came off like little, like, you know, amateur, you know, right. Where like, you know, you see this
some pretty big names painted their face though.
Well, yeah, but like he probably didn't know what I was gonna paint.
Right.
And then you just think of like these guys on the independents that try to like look spooky, and
right.
their face paint looks like you work at like Spirit Halloween or something. So he probably thought I was going to come off like that.
So how long did it take before you finally painted your face?
A year and a half.
So did you paint half of it then?
Oh, yeah. It's always been half of it.
What was that?
Always been half of it.
Why?
Well, because my uncle.
Right. Tell that story. A lot of people don't know that story.
So like my uncle was drunk driving. And
how old were you?
5.
Right.
And then when he passed away in the accident when I was there.
You were in the car?
Yes.
So what happened? Someone hit him? Did he?
No. He literally just lost
control.
Yes.
Fall asleep?
I don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah.
But you're in the damn car.
Yes.
And is it rolling? Is it flipping? What is happening?
Like, it's rolling for sure. Oh, wow. Like, yeah.
So this is your real first stunt. You don't know it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Unc.
But the thing is, it's not like he died like right then and there.
Right.
He died in the hospital.
Right.
But a lot of it, I don't even think he had a seatbelt on.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know what the hell.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. And then, so I always wanted to like paint my face. And I just figured, you know.
So that's the backstory for you.
Yes.
Okay. And I've heard you say you're half dead.
Well, no, but the thing is, like.
Is that a character?
No, but the thing is, that goes back to the Spirit Halloween bullshit. Like, right. I don't want to, like, come off like I'm some, like, half dead zombie. Like, that's never what I was.
Okay. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. That's never what I was going for. Cause I remember I was, like, on the Independence, and then there's, like, some wrestlers at the time, like, that didn't know anything about me. They're like, oh, I like the zombie gimmick. And I'm like, God damn it.
It's not what I'm trying to do.
I always said, like, it's not a zombie gimmick, and it's not like I'm half dead where I believe that. When I say I'm half dead, is it's in the sense of, like, I don't respect people or trust people. So, like, a lot of, like, living that goes into life is how you perceive the world and who you trust and everything like that. And if you don't trust anybody, half of you is going to feel dead inside.
Right.
So a lot of it was just going into, like, from an early age, like, I don't trust, like, my uncle, you know, or like, and then you kind of, you don't trust people and, like, what they're, you know what I mean? So you're just like, fuck, like, whatever. I'm, you know, so that's where the aspect of half dead comes in.
All right.
It was never like, oh, I'm fucking walking dead here.
Right.
But, and then that's where, like, because I got this, like, tattoo on my chest, like, nothing's over till you're underground. And a lot of that has to do
with all the shit on your body, though, dude. What's one on your neck?
Ain't life grand.
So everything you, this is what I noticed about you from the first time we met to you coming over. Like, you can catch Darby. He's in a bunch of the workouts. He comes over occasionally and jumps in with us when we're filming, even when we're not. But what I noticed is you have a really positive outlook on life.
Well, because the nothing's over till you're underground is I got that tattooed when I was in film school, and I was about to drop out of film school, and like, I just kept thinking to myself, a lot of people at the time, they may be 21, like people that I went to high school with, but they already felt like, oh, I'm too old to achieve my dreams. Like, right. And that's fucking wild.
Ridiculous.
But people are controlled by their brains and, like, their thoughts on how the world works. And
stop there, because that's a powerful statement. And that's if you catch any of my reels on Facebook or Instagram, it's all about the 6-inch piece of real estate in between your ears. It's that inner voice. Yes. It's that story you tell yourself, and, well, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, and then they'd be like, oh, like, my dreams can't come true. And then they just settle for this whatever mediocre life, because it's like, you know, when you're in, like, second grade, no one's signed, like, where do you want to be when you're older? No one's going to say Walgreens assistant manager. People just get this, like, and there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want to do. But a lot of people don't want to do that, but they settle for it.
Well, they do, because then they get married, then they have a kid, then they need a job, then they need to feed their kids.
But, like, that's the thing, though, is, like, that's why I got, like, nothing's over till you're underground, because anytime you can achieve your main goals. And I think you're a good example, you know, becoming when you were, like,
35 is when I started wrestling to train.
Yes.
And my career didn't take off till I was 40.
Yeah.
You know?
So, like, that's the thing is, like, I know, like, I've heard of people that, like, their goal is being a Hollywood movie, and their big break doesn't happen until they're 60.
Right.
So, like, the thing is, it's just like, nothing's over until you're dead. So, like, your dreams or whatever. And you talk about, like, your mind and stuff like that. What a lot of people also don't know about me is I went to, so Rob Dyrdek, who is, you know, the host of Ridiculousness,
right?
He has this hypnotist / psychiatrist, and then he credits that guy for all his success.
Because he probably shifted his mind.
So. Yes. So I went to that same guy in La Jolla, California, Dr. George Pratt. And then
Is he actually a doctor?
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. I might want to talk to you about that.
Like, hypnotherapy and all this, like, stuff. And I went to him because
How old were you?
This was 2 years ago.
Okay.
Because I was doing good in AEW. Everything was, like, positive, but I felt like there was something, like, I needed to expand my mind. And, like, so he works on, like, blockage that you have, like, to like unblock, you know, and reach your full potential.
Sure.
So I asked him, like, what was Dyrdek's thing? Like, what was holding him back? Because at the time he was only 24 years old and he was about to lose all his sponsorships in skateboarding. And this is before he was on TV or anything like that. And then he said the biggest thing that was holding Dyrdek back that they helped unblock was Dyrdek is from Ohio. So in Dyrdek's mind, he didn't find himself worthy of being a millionaire because he's just some skinny white kid from Ohio.
Right.
And then he let that control him. He's like, oh, someone like me isn't worthy of all this.
Yeah, that worthy thing weighs on a lot of people, man.
So when they unblocked that, that's when he was off to the races.
Right.
And then that's why Dyrdek always says in interviews, like, I owe everything to Dr. George Pratt.
Because he opened up his mindset.
Yeah. And that's like, I'm a big component of like meditation. Like,
meditation's huge. I'm just literally starting that, but you're right.
It's like so fun. And so like that goes back to like everything. So I got that tattoo and then the Ain't Life Grand I got probably 2 months ago. And then it was
I knew that. I thought that was a new one.
Yeah, it's just like my thing with that is, you know, every time the more I meditate, the more I feel like I find out like what my life's all about. And then like, then you realize how amazing life is.
Stop there. Cause people need to hear that. That was a very, very profound statement you just said there. Cause I've been looking into meditation for years now and been doing it on and off, but now I'm finally dabbling into it where I'm probably not going to let it go because of all the things you're saying, it takes you away from the bullshit of life. Or the pressures or the stresses or the I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
And puts you into a spot where you're just focusing on your breath. And it's probably good to just put some earplugs in sometimes. So you don't hear anything but your breath. And it's that calming time. And that's what as human beings, we need that.
Yeah.
We need that.
That's like a big thing with it's funny how people don't find themselves worthy, yet they find the next person onto the street worthy. Like, oh, like, well, how'd that guy, like, oh, that guy like became super successful millionaire. And like, well, yeah, he's worthy of it, but then why aren't you? Like people just seem, you know, like the kind of, it's like about building your own like self up and it's like real cool. And so like last night, for example, like when I first moved to Atlanta, I was like living in my car and I would be up in the city.
When you first got here, you didn't have the gig.
Yeah,
no AEW.
This is like 2017, late 2017.
And people understand, sometimes you live in your car.
Yeah.
But you can get out of your car.
Yeah. But like the thing is like, so I would park in the parking garage up in the city by the Anytime Fitness because I would take showers at the Anytime Fitness, use my George Foreman grill to cook food there. And then, but like, so that's up in the city, but I live down in McDonough, which is like 45 minutes from there. But last night I drove up there. And I like worked out in that specific gym.
Right.
And then I drove up to the parking garage and then I like parked there and just like sat and like remembered being in this car.
That was powerful.
It was emotional. Like there's times I'll cry just because it's like living with that, like what if, like back in 2017, like what if this is not going to work out? Like what's going to happen? You know what I mean? And then, so like I'm up in that parking garage last night and I'm just like thinking to myself, and I like to do that like probably like once every 6 months, go to that and just like remember sleeping in that.
Keeps you humble.
Yes. And that's the thing is like the night before I beat Cody for the TNT championship, I just slept in my car at the hotel parking lot. They got us a nice hotel for AEW, but I was like, I'm just gonna sleep in the car. Cause like, it's like, remembering things.
Yeah, and people, like, a lot of people don't understand it. They think, well, what the fuck's he doing that for? He doesn't need that. He got the hotel. Well, but it's about grounding yourself.
Yes.
And then seeing the future. You manifest things to happen.
Yes.
And you've been doing it all the way through this.
And that's like a big thing that I found out with Dr. George Pratt is it's not so much my success that's going to make me happy. It's the success of my family and friends. So like I was so caught up in the rat race of like, I gotta make it. So I become champion and I still feel like something's missing.
Right.
And then when I start talking to Dr. George Pratt, and then all of a sudden it's like, it was never about me. It was about everyone. So right then and there, that's when I started like flying my dad and my mom out to crazy events.
I met. Yeah. When you're about to jump over the house. Yeah. So like maybe kill yourself.
But so it's like I'd meet up with them. No, I bring them places. Now I pay my brother to live at my house now and watch my pugs. I have 10 of them. He's the
pug. Wait a minute, are you up to 10 now?
He's the pug whisperer. And then like, but like the thing is like I pay him. And I bring him on all these adventures and these crazy places. And it's like, that's what makes this all worth it, is bringing your family and friends along for the ride. Because if you're on the top of the mountain by yourself, like that's...
Doesn't work.
Yeah. So like, it's awesome that, you know, so like, that's like my goals now, is just to have my family and friends, like, because that's way more rewarding than anything I could do in professional wrestling.
It's attitude of that gratitude.
Yeah.
It's all of that.
So it's real nice to, there's nothing I won't do for like my close friends and family.
And you have the people you trust. So I'm noticing you're drinking a little bit of a energy drink.
What's A-Shock it? Energy.
They some of your boys?
Yeah. I want to, they sponsor Nitro Circus, and they're the official drink of Nitro Circus, all these other crazy like things. And, you know, the cool thing about energy drinks is when you can work something out with them, is a lot of people are like, oh yeah, like energy drinks, yeah, whatever. But like what they do for the alternate action sports like world.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And right? Then what they make possible, you know, like if you look at Pastrana's compound, it's like a lot of it's funded from energy drinks.
Right.
You know, and like it pushes like the boundaries of like what's possible in action sports. And that's what I want my house to become, is like, I got 14 acres, but I have all these crazy
14 acres on that piece.
Yeah.
There's a lot of houses around you.
Yeah. And then I built this big skate park in the backyard. You haven't seen yet.
You got to see his crib, and I haven't even seen that yet.
And then, but we have all these dirt jumps now because I bought a Can-Am and I have a four wheeler and dirt bikes. But I want my house to become what Pastrana's house was, like this action sports mecca, like compound where like the best in the world come to perfect their craft. Right. And like I want that like energy around my house, because like when I went to Pastrana's house and I remember like looking around, and it was such a positive place where you're like, oh, so like, it's like I go there and it's like amazing. And then that's where I want to have like, I want to like wake up in the morning, like look out the backyard, and someone's like doing a double backflip on the dirt bike.
So this is the entrepreneur in you too, you know, which it's very few of us have that, you know what I mean? That have that this vision to like, I never lost sight of what am I going to do after this?
Yeah.
Like as I was going through it and living at its highest level. And did I think DDP yoga was going to be that? I thought maybe, but I thought it would have been like inspirational speaking, which I do on top of that too. But you're always looking like, what's that thing you're doing? It needs to, you know, parlay what you've done into this next deal. Well, so one of the things you have is a clothing line, right?
Yeah.
And what is that called?
It's called Hoodlum. We're in Zoomies, but this Friday we're going to have an online drop. And it's like, we do like an online drop for like 2 weeks only. So it's like, everything's made to order. That's hoodlum.shop. And that's like, so that was another outlet that I can express myself. And it was like, I'm very like grateful and fortunate to have gotten into Zoomies with us just being a brand for 9 months.
Right.
And 'cause Zoomies are like, you know, the biggest like skate retail thing in the malls around the country. So that was an awesome like thing. So it's just another outlet. And then it goes back to Nitro Circus. I was like a big fan of Nitro Circus growing up. And if anyone's not familiar with Nitro Circus, it's like the premier like action sports. Like it's the best of the best with everything. And then so I was doing one of their live shows in Seattle, and I got on one of those tricycle big wheels. And I went down this big 40-foot rolling, and I backflipped a 25-foot gap. And then I landed on it, but then I slipped out last second. And like,
then you said that to me.
Yeah. And then
Nathan, we need that too.
And then the thing is, like, as I was backflipping this tricycle, and then like it was so weird because I was like, I couldn't stop smiling. And I felt like my in a weird way, like my true calling in life was backflipping tricycles.
And I was big wheels.
And I was just like, I was like, man, like I could do this forever. And like, I was like, man, like, I feel like this, I was like, this like makes me so happy. And so I'm going back in September 9th. They're doing a show in Brooklyn, New York. And I want to go down there and help promote the Arthur Ashe show. And that's another thing with AEW is I'll come up with ideas to like help promote the shows. I'm like, yo, like, I'm going to perform at Nitro Circus on September 9th in Brooklyn. And then 2 weeks later, we're going to be there for Arthur Ashe. Right. So I'm trying to connect with this action sports fans. Right. And so I'm going to go back and backflip the tricycle again, but I want to land it this time, like actually roll away. Cause once you roll away, you hit this big airbag, but I haven't made it to the airbag yet. So like, that's like,
you will.
Yeah.
You
like, will. So, but at first I was like, man, this is gnarly. Like, woo. Like I was like looking down, about to go down. And I was like, holy shit. Like, this is insane.
So
like,
funny.
And then, so we're going to hit that. And then, but that's like a cool, like little thing. And then, another big outlet that I like to do is stuff with music. And on September, I think it's 24th, we're going to Kentucky for a Louder Than Life Festival. My buddy's band is like playing one of the main like sets there, and Ghost Mane. And we're going to, there's going to be like so much, like thousands of people there, but that's when we're going to do the body bag crowd surf again. Because when we did it before, there was like a club of like 350 people. But now if there's like over like, you know, like thousands and thousands of people at this Louder Than Life Festival, that's what we're going to do, the body bag crowd surf again. And that, and the people are like, don't you get claustrophobic? I'm like, just give me like a Lunchable and a water.
Maybe put a little plastic thing so you can see people when you're going.
No, but that's the fun part. I just want to be like, where
you
am
don't,
I?
Yeah, you don't want to know where you're going. Yeah.
Cool thing is like when we do these like music festivals, like people be like, oh shit, that's Darby Allin in that bag, like in it, like, and it just like, I like to be very hands-on with my advertising.
I know you do. I love that about you.
Is there something we can do that's physical? Like, no, can you just talk? I'm like, no, I gotta do something. But it's fun.
So this is a, you know, for a kid growing up being a huge wrestling fan, Sting being the icon that he, you know, has been for damn, over 35 years now. He's in the Ric Flair Club of lasting forever.
Yeah, 63 right now.
When you found, like, how did that come about of you and the Stinger getting together?
I don't even know, to be honest. It was like,
it was so natural.
Yeah.
Like, it's so natural. It's almost like osmosis put it together.
So, you know, about a week out, I heard he was coming in.
Right.
And I was like, oh, shit. Like, that's crazy. And I've never met him at that time, you know.
Right.
And then, like, the day of, he was coming in. He had his own little private, like, trailer. And then, like, Cody's like, hey, let's go meet him. I'm, like, walking in. And then the first thing he says is, like, I like your videos, your promos. And I'm like, that's another example. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and I was like, oh, that's so – I was, like, sick. So that broke the ice.
Right.
And then –
that Stinger's digging your shit.
Yeah. And he's like, don't change a thing. And I was like, oh, sick. And then I don't know if they had a specific plan for him when they first got in.
Yeah, probably not.
But like about 4 weeks in, I feel like we were building up like a tease, like, what's Sting gonna do? And all of a sudden, like 1 week, it was just like, all right, you're a Stinger. And I was like, oh, sick. And then this is during the pandemic. And
no people. I mean, that to me was like, God, just wait a little while longer because everyone will lose their fucking minds.
Yeah. But there was like, I don't know how, there was a small crowd the night he debuted. Small crowd.
Like that's when people were just starting.
Yes.
To have the guts, you know, let them in.
But yeah, like, and I remember the small crowd even being super fucking loud.
And Tony Schiavone is it's Sting. Tony's phenomenal.
Yeah, it was one of those moments where I was laying in the ring and then, you know, selling and the lights go out. And then I'm like, I know what's going to happen. So it's like one of those like awesome moments.
Oh,
where
dude.
You're just like, oh my God.
And getting that rub.
Yeah.
You know, like for me, it was when I was going through my shit with, Randy had, I don't remember how it happened, but Sting fucking came out and with a baseball bat, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm over his fuck. So me and Randy are already going through our thing and they're circling me. And when you start to get those rubs from those top, like,
yes,
icon guys, it just pushes you to the next level.
And this goes back to what people, they just assume me and Sting, or, oh, they're just paired together because they have face paint. And I was like, it goes so much
further
beyond that. So, for example, we're in the pandemic. Like, I found this boiler room at Daly's Place, and I'm just changing the boiler room by myself. Just like, it's not like I don't want to change with the boys because I have a big head. It's just more the fact that, like, I like to meditate and I like to, like, think about, you know, storylines and like what I want to do. And it's just that silence.
Sure, I get it.
Is like really good for me. So I'm in this boiler room and there's literally a dead rat in there and stuff. Sting comes by. And at the time he's been there for like about 2-3 months maybe. And he comes by and he like looks, he's like, "You changing here?" Yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, like it's just, I just shut the door and, you know, think about life." And then he's like, "You don't need to be in here anymore. My locker room is your locker room now." And he's got his private trailer.
Right.
And then so he's like, you can change your mind now. And then, so to this day, he's got a private room and I always change in there. It's just me and Sting in there.
Right.
It's just us two for hours talking. And he normally like shows up at the building, like say or if the show's at 8, maybe like around like 5. So from call time's 1, so I'll be there from 1 to 5 just by myself, you know, stretching or writing goals down or thinking of like maybe like doing Zoom calls for other businesses and stuff like that. But the moment he comes in, we're in there just talking from like, you know, about segments and stuff. But it's like really cool. And the fact that a lot of people don't know that part about us, you know, like, and because like I don't feel like Sting would just open his door to anybody. But now he's like, he's definitely got a bigger taste of like what I'm all about outside the ring. Cause he was there when I jumped the house and he's like, "So why are we doing this again?"
Well, I'll never forget me and Sting were wrestling on, he was the first over guy to like give me a match. And like, it's 1996. I want to say it was January 24th. Cause I think I saw that somewhere. And he said, "So we're working tonight." He goes, "What do you want to do?" I'm like, I got some ideas. And he let me like lay out like most of it, you know?
Yeah.
And then we went out there and we fucking, you know, it was a hell of a match.
Yeah.
Let me back up and explain what this really means. When I tell Michael P.S. Hayes that I'm managing him at the time, right? And Jimmy Jam Garvin, the Freebirds, right? They're not going to let me manage anymore. You're going to let me still do color commentating, but I'm a fourth string color commentator, right? So I'm thinking, oh man, my career's over because next guy to freaking, I got to become a wrestler.
Yeah.
So I tell them right before we walk to the ring, because they're so, as much as they busted my balls, they were super empathetic to the situation. Like, "Hey, D, so sorry to hear, man. You know, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Hey, no big deal. I got 7 months left of my contract. I'm going to go become a wrestler." They look at each other, burst out laughing so hard. Michael falls down, right? And I'm like, "Fuck you. Give them both the finger and go to the ring. I'll see you out there." After that match, and me and Sting walk through the curtain, like standing ovation. I'm like,
"Is that on YouTube?"
It'll be on YouTube, sure.
Yeah. Yep. I want to see. I just never, I don't, you know.
So wait, let me finish. So I go home the next day, and my day was go to the gym, go to my chiropractor, can apply kinesiologist, deep muscle massage therapy, and then go get tan, and then get home around 8 o'clock. I forgot something, so I ran home to my house. As I'm running out the door, I'm hearing the phone ring, and it goes to the messenger, "Paige, P.S. I run to the phone, "Mike, hey, buddy, man, I've heard of you, whatever." He's, "God damn, son of a bitch, mother." I'm like, Mike, "What's the matter? What's the matter?" "Paige, you know, sometimes you want someone to not be home because you want to leave a fucking message." "Yeah. You want me to hang up so you can call back and leave back?" "No, fuck it. You know, you're on here now. But I got to be honest with you. I have no senior match last night. I got to tell you, you and the Stinger, I have never been so happy to eat crow in all my life." He goes, "Great job, kid." And he hung up on me. But that moment with Sting, giving me that. And we would have some, it was my favorite match. We're losing to him for the world title and that thing. And we were going home, like going to be finished in a minute. And they go, you got five more minutes. And that match. And that succession of things we did, because we got to work together so many times. Anytime you ever see him pick up for a spinning powerbomb, he rubs on my hair. He goes, shampoo. Because he just loves to fuck around with little shit like that. Yeah. It makes it so much more fun. You know?
No.
But I loved working with him, man.
Yeah, when we call matches and stuff, he has all these funny one-liners.
Right.
Yeah. Make Dallas, it fun. I want to add this real quick on that front before we wrap things up here. Like, sure, Darby, you got a huge rub from Sting, no doubt about that. But I also think that you've lent some credibility to Sting as he's on this last run here in his late 60s, where he's in front of this audience. You know, some of the audience is younger, didn't see the heyday of Sting. And you have this cool enigma quality about you that is drawing people to see Sting in this final act of his career. I would have to imagine for you that has to be a really rewarding experience getting to carry that out here.
Yeah, no, it's like something to know how legendary his career has been up until this point, and then that you have, you know, you're part of the final chapter, which, like, everyone knows, like, the final chapter could mean just as much as any part of the any other chapters. And then, like, to be in that, it's like when he first got to AEW, he originally signed on for just cinematic matches,
right? Which are way harder than regular matches.
So he signed up for the cinematic matches, and then we're training at his house down in Texas because he had a ring down there.
Right.
And then I just straight up said to him, I was like, man, we don't need no cinematic matches. Let's do this live. And he, like, and then I was like, kind of convinced him to think about it. And he's like,
you convinced Sting to come out of retirement?
To do actual
in-ring.
Once you do cinematic shit, it's like you can do it over and over and over again to get the right shot. It's like a movie.
Yeah,
that's what friggin', you know, Ready to Rumble was. It beat the fuck out of me, man. I mean, it was just because I take the same bumps over and over and over again, and you're cold.
Yeah,
you know. And at the time, I'm 42 years old, man.
Yeah, like I remember that. Like, and I was just like, there's nothing we have to hide here with, right, like your performance. It's not like we're like, all right, cut. Like, let's get another angle that makes that look better. Like, you're moving good.
Yeah, I was surprised.
You're,
man,
kicking ass. Like, so that's when we got the green light to do me and Sting versus Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky at Double or Nothing. And that was like his first match back, like, live since the neck injury that he had, sure, in 2014.
Right.
And I remember when I was training, I watched that match with him, like, his neck, you know, and then I was like, obviously, like, I'm like, I know Sting's this legendary guy, and I'm just like, that's wild to see, like, someone's career end there.
Right.
So you thought.
Right.
And then,
so,
like,
you thought.
And then, like, so you fast forward, and then we're having this, like, this match. And what meant the most to me after that match is him coming up to me. He's like, none of this is possible without you. After, like, we had the match. And then, so, like, you know, like, I call my brother the Pug Whisperer. I feel like I'm the Sting Whisperer in, like, a way. Like, with just, like, to, like, tell, because he kind of, like, comes up. He's like, you think I should do this? Or you think I should do that? And I'd be like, don't do this, do this. Like, and it just, because he's like, you know me, like, in what I'm capable of more than anything. And I'm like, dude, like, that's, like, what's so cool about everything. And then the fact that we're, like, so close now.
Yeah, it's great. Then, you can see it. I mean, there's certain people who have chemistry together, and you guys really do. Now, we're going to leave it on this note here because I know we've been here for a while. But I saw Sting. What's the highest shit he jumped off? Like, I did the big thing off the top rope onto the guys on the floor when I did it. But Sting was doing that back in the day. I'd never done it. But then I saw him come off what looked like a skyscraper. What was that?
So everyone's like, oh, Darby's a horrible influence. I'm like, I never told him to do any of that.
Oh,
he came over to me and said, I'm jumping off this. I'm like, no, people got to get that straight. Like, I don't tell him to jump off of shit. He jumps off of himself. And I would say, like, so when he jumped off at Revolution off the balcony through the two tables that are stacked on each other.
Oh my God.
Like, that was wild.
I watched that back like 9 times to see if it was like, did he make it through that?
But like the last match we've had was at, the Forbidden Door pay-per-view when we teamed up with New Japan. And then, to start the match, he jumped off the tunnel, and that's a pretty tall tunnel.
Wow.
And then, so it's like the beginning of before the match even starts, that's how the heels are like making their entrance, and he jumps off onto them. And then it's like a moment where, like, as he's jumping, you're like,
God, I hope he hits him.
Well, as he, you're like, is he going to be able to like to finish the match? Cause he had so much other things he had to do in the match, like physical stuff. I'm like, oh man. But like, it was awesome. And then like, so I don't know. Like, he's just got this urge to jump off the thing.
Well, bottom line is he's still going, and the rubbing off. And he's another guy who's pretty much straight edge today, frigging all the way around.
And I've been talking more about, like, had him get the dry needling just recently.
Yeah.
He never tried it, which is like pretty much like acupuncture.
Right.
And then I had him do it. And
I got a bunch of things. You got to come over to my house now. You got to see what the hell I have now from this Live-O-2, which is oxygen deprivation training, but it really, like, for your brain, for your body, I always feel like super jacked up of it. It's like, we're breathing 21% oxygen right now, right? The bag has got 90% oxygen, and the lower pack has anywhere from 8% oxygen up to 16% oxygen where you set it. So now you're training and it's across your whole mouth. And when you're not breathing in that air, you've got to really and it gets scary sometimes because it's like you can't breathe. You can just take the mask off and you can breathe again, or you can flip to 90%. But while you're going through it, it's that fight or flight thing. Yeah. But you got to come over because it's really about helping the brain and getting oxygen to the brain with the burst.
So you do it while you do your
bike
stretch.
I can't do my workout with it because it's too much movement.
Yeah.
But I got a treadmill for that for my wife. I like the bike just because I'm doing it really easy in the beginning because you've got to get used to that.
Is it something you can skate with?
No, you can't. You can't.
Put it on a backpack and just go with it. There you go.
This is something, though, that I care about for this.
Yes.
About oxidizing the brain. There's a couple of boys that I've turned on to this. Jake for his, his OC, what it's called, OCPD. What is it called where you can't breathe? Well, whatever it is. That's why you see Jake with that because, he smoked for 50 plus years, and so now it's, that, and he's down. There's two cigarettes he can take, but it's hard to breathe. So now we've got that oxygen training to, again, get the good oxygen on him and deprivation. But you need to come over and try that.
Yeah, one. I love trying out new things. Like, it's so fun to all these new technology. I get all excited about that. Like, I'm always like, dude, I'll be a guinea pig for any physical therapy and stuff.
Of course you will be.
I bought this neck stretcher thing, where you pump it up and it stretches your neck.
Yeah, Nash turned me on to that.
I lay down with it for 30 minutes.
And it's good.
It feels amazing.
It's about traction.
Yes. It's just like an inversion table for your neck.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's nice.
So you got to come over. You got to see the yoga swing too, where your hips and you hang.
I saw that.
That's real. You got to get one of those, dude.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's another. Yeah,
it looks nice.
Well, listen, dude, it was so great for you to come by, man.
Yes,
so
sir.
Great to come by. We're going to wrap it up here, Johnny. I'm sorry I didn't take you out. There's a lot of things to talk about with Darby here. Next week, one of the things that we were going to highlight on is Roman Reigns and McIntyre. What happens out there in the castle that they're fighting over there in the UK? So, really looking forward to that match, and I'm expecting it to be a barn burner.
Yeah, we got all out.
We got all out too.
Yeah, me and Sting will be there. Our match will be announced Wednesday.
Okay, how about that?
Be at All Out.
Where it all started, man. Yeah. All Out, man. All right, man.
I like the sound of that. I like the sound of that. Darby, this was so great, man. We got to get you back on here at some point because there's so much more to touch on. But thank you so much for your time. All the Snake Pit fans appreciate you. Diamond Dallas Page, anything else you want to throw out there? Cameo, of course. Anything else?
Not everybody knows where I'm at on Cameo. They can get me there. But check out some of our reels on Facebook, Instagram. Just throwing out a lot of positive energy. So until next week, see ya.
We'll see you guys next week right here on DDP Snake Pit.